Today's edition of the Daily Caller podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
Alrighty, hello again everyone and welcome to it. It's the Daily Caller Podcast for the 27th day of March 2020. Had to pause there for a second just to make sure I had the right year. You know, when you've been stuck inside, what the hell do you do? I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Thank you for listening, tuning in, telling a friend, rating and reviewing on iTunes. We're 2 written reviews away from 300 written reviews, and we're well over 1,000 starred reviews. So I appreciate every last one of you, even the negative people like, you swear too much sometimes. Yeah, I do. You would not enjoy consuming adult beverages with me. Let me just put it that way. Okay. Special show today. It's the Friday interview edition of the program, and we've got 2 interviews, if you will. Well, one is a caller and one is an interview. I had a chat with Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy. That's right. I actually have 4 MyPillows in the house, 2 in our bed and 2 in our guest bed. And they're great. They're great. I wanted to talk to him about that, but I really wanted to talk to him about his company basically shifting 75% of its production, not basically, literally, shifting 75% of its production to making medical masks. So that's awesome. It's another prime example of the private sector stepping up. I don't know that it would have occurred to me if I were in some government bureaucrat to contact the MyPillow guy and say, hey, can you guys make surgical masks? But it occurred to them that they could do it. And they're doing it, and they're churning out a ton of them, and they're not for sale to the public. So this isn't a for-profit gamble. This is what the country needs thing. And there are literally hundreds, thousands of companies across the country, and really around the world in their own countries, stepping up and doing the same thing, but not like here. They don't have the capacity. They don't have the innovative spirit that we have in this country. Maybe a couple of countries, mostly under government order in the rest of the world. But here in the United States, people see a problem and they step up and solve it. And that's what makes the United States so incredible. And that's what the Democrats want to destroy. Anyway, also, before we get to Mike Lindell, which was really, we also get into his life. I knew that he had a problem with drugs, that he was an addict. I had no idea that it had lasted as long as it did in his life, up until 2009. Crack cocaine. Holy crap. Holy Frank Tanana. So we get into all of that because he's got an autobiography out as well. You're going to enjoy it. The guy's got a lot of energy, and he makes you feel better listening to him with his can-do spirit. I tell him in the interview that he could be, forget the pillow racket, he could be a motivational speaker. He could do that today, or a football coach, because I was ready to go out and take on the world or tackle somebody. Not now, social distancing. I could dropkick them, I suppose, but at least knock them out of bounds. But throw a short person at them and get them to go down, something like that. That counts, doesn't it? Anyway, we get into that. But first, I have a call that I took on my radio program on Thursday. A guy named Rob, who is a medical technician working in a hospital in Baltimore, talking about ventilators and all the ideas that are being floated around about ventilators out there in the media by people who don't know what the hell they're talking about. And it just, I don't know. We get to the truth about that. Some of it is reassuring. Some of it is disturbing. On what he's seen, it's kind of reassuring. But we don't know what's to come. I found it informative. what you take away from it is up to you and your ears, but there's a lot of information in this call that is worth listening to. And I know I can already hear the emails. Friday shows are usually a little bit shorter just because they're the interview shows. But I've been doing interviews every day this week with, even if you missed any of them, we had Sean Parnell, John Gabriel, Bo Snerdly, and Brian Darling. So that's 4 days, and this is 5 days. So yeah, that's every day this week. And I'll continue that as long as I can find somebody crazy enough to allow me to Skype with them and record it in accordance with all federal laws and state laws. So yeah, it's a really good couple of conversations. I think that they're both worth listening to, or else I wouldn't have bothered to put them in the podcast. And I can feel the emails already going, well, what about the bill that Congress has passed? There is, I mean, you know the details, right? We've gone over the details this week as well. It's a foregone conclusion. The House is going to pass it. Probably tomorrow morning, most likely by voice vote, for all the chest pumping by the left and the right. AOC saying it's not enough, it favors corporations, blah, blah, blah. All the typical crap you'd expect from somebody who's never hired anybody in her whole life. Employed somebody, like was responsible for meeting their payroll. And people on the right, rightly saying that this is too big, this is a mess, but it's going to happen. Maybe one of them will show up and object and demand a roll call vote, but I doubt it. It wouldn't surprise me, but I doubt it. It'd be stupid because it's going to pass, okay? And the sooner we need the good parts of the bill. We need the good parts of the bill. We absolutely do not need the bad parts of the bill. But the good parts, we need many of them sooner rather than later. We need to get the ball rolling. And Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, said that it'll take about 2 or 3 weeks for the checks to go out, for example. That's how government works. 2 to 3 weeks, checks physically being mailed to people. Well, what if, for example, the Postal Service, what if it gets so bad? And I don't think it will, but what if it does? And I'll knock on wood having said that. What if the Postal Service is shut down in 2 weeks before the checks go out? What if it gets that bad? What do you do then? People are just sitting there with nothing except an empty promise. I don't even know how unemployment works anymore. If they can do direct deposit, I imagine they can, but the unemployment checks could be held up because I assume some people would prefer to get a check, a physical check. So there are all sorts of possible problems once the ball starts rolling. So we need to get the ball rolling as soon as possible because the government moves slowly. Well, Congress moved quickly this week, but the bureaucracy of government moves at its own pace. And God forbid there's an outbreak of coronavirus in the government, in the Treasury Department, trying to process this, trying to put all of this in place. There's just a lot of things that need to be done for the good parts of this bill to get into place, to be enforced, to keep the economy moving. It is nearly at a standstill. We need to keep it moving. It does not get stuck. So the sooner that happens, the better. Again, it wouldn't surprise me completely if somebody voted to or objected to the unanimous consent. But I suspect that most of the chest bumping will be just that. Chest bumping, and then everybody moves on, and they can complain about it later on during the campaign or what have you. And then realistically, when this is over, Republicans should take the House back and remove a whole bunch of things that the Democratic pork they put in there. The money for NPR. Okay, congratulations. You got money for PBS and NPR last year. We're going to cut your funding then by that much, if not eliminate it, preferably completely. But if that's impossible, we're going to cut your funding by what you got when the country was most in need and you still had your hand out because you put your own funding over the health and well-being of the American people. stuff like that. Kennedy Center can cough back up that $25 million, I think. We can find a way. So, yeah, there's no point in talking about a foregone conclusion that everybody knows about. You can bitch about it all you want, but the sun is still going to rise in the east in the morning and set in the west, no matter how much you dislike it. So I just don't see the point in arguing about it. I will point out one thing before we get to the very interesting call from the front lines of coronavirus. CNN is hosting a town hall with Joe Biden on coronavirus. This is the ultimate in Monday morning quarterbacking, but it's more like Monday morning quarterbacking your fantasy football league. Joe Biden has no say whatsoever. This is an attempt to prop up Joe Biden. That's it. It's going to be tonight. Apparently, he's going to be from his little library there. I wonder if he'll be coherent. There's a 20% chance that he will be throughout most of it. But this is propaganda. The guy has no say whatsoever in anything. He is an afterthought in the grand scheme of politics right now. There are more pressing matters at hand for the nation and even CNN to cover, although CNN doesn't cover it. Joe Biden announced his quote-unquote plan, though, for coronavirus. He said, if I were president, here's what I would do right now. Use all available authorities to turn the tide of this epidemic. That's point one. That's the entirety of point one, by the way. So, he would use all available authorities, as if the president is just sitting around going, yeah, let's use 15% of the available authorities. Number two. Launch a task force to ensure money rapidly gets to people who need it. So his first one is to do what's being done. His second point is to create a new bureaucracy. Is anybody sitting around going, what this crisis needs right now is another layer of bureaucracy. We need some middle management types to second guess everything everybody is doing right now. Answering to somebody who's a political animal. That's what this calls for. get money to people rapidly. And then thirdly, then this is a three-point plan, by the way. This is it. There's no like, well, maybe number four will be good. No, there's no number four. His third point is bring leaders of Congress together to build the next deal. Well, there's an idea. Who'd have thought of that? Gee whiz, Joe. If only we had listened to you from the beginning, you know, back when President Trump instituted the travel ban from China and you were calling it xenophobic and wrongheaded. Of course, it's Joe has plausible deniability on that because he doesn't remember it. He literally doesn't remember it. So I guess that's something. I don't know. Anyway, I saw that and like CNN is just doing his propaganda. CNN is literally the enemy of the United States of America. They are parroting Chinese talking points as if they are their own thoughts. It's disgusting. I can't even accidentally turn it on anymore. So there you go. The caller's name is Rob, by the way, and he had just gotten off the shift. He listens to my radio show. You hear all of it. I think the questions were pretty interesting. They're not a lot of energy. I was trying to be very serious. I was doing my serious radio guy voice during this, but there's some really interesting information, some reassuring information, and some scary information in this call. He held through the break because he called right at the end of the hour. And once I realized what he does for a living and that he knows what he's talking about, and we only had like a minute left, I asked him if he could stick over because I wanted to pick his brain. And it seemed as though people found it worthwhile. I hope you will too. But first, before we get to that, let's talk really quickly about Life Change Tea. Oh yes, Life Change Tea. And this time when you're eating, who knows what you're eating now? Your body is getting filled up with all sorts of things. And your body can already only digest some of the nutrition that you put into it because your body's clogged up with a whole bunch of stuff, stopping your digestive tract from absorbing all the nutrition from your food that you put into your body. That's where Life Change Tea comes in. You go to getthetea.com. You pick a flavor. You pick any of the flavors or any of the supplements that they offer there. And you drink it. You drink it. You brew up a whole big gallon of it. You only drink a cup a day. Don't overdo it because it works, and it works really well. If you drink way too much of it, your weekend is shot. I mean, not that you got to go to work on Monday or anything, but still, you don't want to spend your weekend sitting on the toilet. You drink a cup a day. Follow the instructions to the letter. And soon you will realize that you're regular, and then you'll notice, hey, wait a second, I got more energy, because your body will be able to absorb all the nutrition in the food that you're eating. So much more of it. So much, I mean, there's less nutrition in our food now that it's processed all the hell. So you need to be able to absorb as much nutrition from it as humanly possible. That's what Life Change Tea does. It cleans you out. It's a tea that makes you go. So you go to getthetea.com. You choose all the products that you want. You throw them in your shopping cart. You go to checkout. You enter promo code Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at checkout. And boom, you get free shipping on top of the big sale that they're having. So you can't beat that. Try it once. You'll be hooked. You'll notice more energy. You'll just feel better. That's the way it works. Getthetea.com. All one word. Promo code Derek and click apply. That's how it works. Okay, now let's get to the interview with the medical technician whose job it is to intubate a word I remembered from my ER days. I just couldn't recall it until he said it. Intubate patients with, respiratory problems. Doesn't have to be coronavirus.
Welcome to the Derek Hunter Show on Talk Radio 680 WCVM.
Welcome back to the Derek Hunter Show, the number 410-WCBM-680 or 1-800-WCBM-680. Before the break, we were joined by Rob in Kingsville, who happens to be, I don't even know what the job title is. He works on these ventilators that everybody is talking about, and he's kind enough to stick through the break. Rob, thank you for holding through. What exactly is your job?
I am what's called a respiratory therapist.
Okay. As far as the stories that we're seeing about we need more ventilators, we need it, it's a horrible situation, we're being overrun, you heard me talk about the New York Times piece, and you heard me read what the former New York Times reporter said about we don't actually need a million of them, that would be everybody, a million people on them all at once. Where in your experience does the truth lie? Not completely with one, but, generally, which way does it tip?
Well, again, I think it has to do with the demographic of patients that are getting sick. If 1 million people were over the age of 65 and had multiple comorbidities, then, yeah, you're going to need a million ventilators because that's the course it's going to take. But that's not how it goes in real life. You're going to have people who are, in their 40s and get sick and maybe mildly symptomatic and never get to the point where they experience respiratory failure and have to go on a ventilator or be intubated. Do you follow me? It's scattered. When they do that, they're looking at an absolute worst case scenario. And it's not, in my experience, that's not realistic.
And they're presenting it as the norm, though. They're presenting it as an inclusion, which is my problem with it. If it's caveated with, if everything happens, if the worst we can possibly come up with, then I have no problem with reporting it, even though some people will still go, my God, that's going to happen.
Right.
But in the profession, amongst the medical professionals that you work with, relative to the reporting on the concern inside the medical profession from outside, from reporters, is how much panic is there? How much concern is there inside the medical profession and just the issue of whether or not they'll have enough ventilators?
Speaking for my small hospital where I am, we're in the city, and we're preparing for the worst. We actually were discussing the capability of some of the machines to handle more than one person at once. And I can tell you, Derek, I've been doing this for 31 years. I've never heard of that.
Report that one machine was used to hook up to 8 people. That might have been in the U.K.,
And if they're doing that, Derek, it's because they're woefully ill-prepared with machines. They just didn't have enough to begin with. They're not designed to do that. It'd sort of be like saying that you've got a Yugo and you're going to tow a 3-ton trailer up a mountainside. You can sure try it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't. They're not designed to handle two people at once. I'm trying to think of a good analogy. It's just not done.
I also heard yesterday, I think it was during the coronavirus task force briefing, that anesthesiologists are being tapped, that the devices that they use to administer anesthetic for outpatient surgeries can, with a change of one particular valve, be adapted to be a ventilator. Have you heard anything about that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, basically, the machine they're using in the OR when you're doing general surgery, the machine they're using in surgery is pretty much the same thing we're using, you know, up in the ICU.
And so
yeah, that would absolutely be viable.
So, right, before I ask you more technical questions, how's everybody doing in the profession, like your coworkers?
A lot of tension, and a lot of it comes, I got to be honest with you, more from constant new directives being handed down as to how we're supposed to do things and, you know, what new policy and procedure we're supposed to follow. I think that more than fear of the disease.
Is that happening because there's so many people trying to collect as much data as possible?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good point.
So, we want to find out what works, so make sure you document everything. I imagine that would be incredibly stressful. But
yeah.
Overall, spirits are okay. It's not emotional breakdown?
Honestly, yeah. The people I work with really good nurses. My coworkers, the other RTs, I keep saying it's sort of like, we're the people who joined the National Guard never thinking there'd be a war, but now there is.
Mm-hmm.
And just about everybody I know is pretty much stepping up to the plate. I haven't seen anything, doom and gloom. It's more a question of, are we going to be able to keep up? Where I am, we do have positive cases, but it hasn't been overwhelming.
Have you heard tales from other hospitals?
Not really. I have friends who work at university, and I haven't heard anything crazy coming out of there. I can't swear to that, but everybody talks. Everybody talks to each other. My field is fairly small in the city. There aren't that many of us, and after a while, you pretty much know someone everywhere.
If you needed to train somebody on how to, it's not install, that's not the right word, when you put somebody on a ventilator,
right.
What is that procedure called?
Well, initially it's called intubation. That's where we actually insert the breathing tube.
I remember that from my ER watching back in the day.
And then after they're intubated, you hook them up to the ventilator. You have to come up with appropriate settings. And those settings may change depending on how the patient's progression goes. The problem with this disease is that, as it's been explained to me by the doctors and from my own study, once you've reached the point where intubation and mechanical ventilation is required, you're kind of in deep as a patient. It's not going well. And the problem is that you can succumb to something called ARDS, which is acute respiratory distress syndrome, which is just multiple problems happening all at once. You've got potential cardiogenic shock where your blood basically your whole body goes septic. There's multiple organ failure. The lungs fill with fluid, become very stiff, very difficult to ventilate. That's one of the reasons why, to me, it would be pointless for someplace like, a car dealer, or I'm sorry, a car manufacturer to make them, because the techniques used to counteract that problem are really complicated. And a simple, volume ventilator piston machine is not going to be able to do it.
How long would it take you to train somebody to do what you do just on the intubation part and the hooking up part? If there wasn't a necessity, like if suddenly, God forbid, there was a crush of people who needed to be on ventilators, and you couldn't do it all.
Couldn't do it all. I mean, we could probably recruit nurses to pull somebody with no clinical background at all. I wouldn't even want to try. But you could take nurses and teach them what we do. Putting the tube in is not, well, I'm going to say it's not that hard. I've been doing it a long time.
Right.
But putting the tube in is probably the easiest part of it. Figuring out the appropriate settings and the best way to manage the ventilator once the patient's on it, that's where it gets complicated.
What is the risk? You're not getting enough oxygen in the blood, or you're pumping too much air into the lungs? I mean,
not getting enough oxygen in is a big one, because when you start experiencing the ARDS, it becomes exponentially harder in a very short amount of time to, A, get oxygen in, to actually ventilate the patient, not worrying about gas exchange. Just the fact of getting the air in and out of the lungs becomes difficult, because the lungs become, the term we use is less compliant. They're not as stretchy and springy. They become very stiff. Then there's a risk of trauma to the lungs just trying to get air in and out of them. You can pop a lung, you have a pneumothorax, the patient then becomes really critical really fast.
When somebody's put on a ventilator, they obviously need it. Nobody does it because they got nothing better to do on a Tuesday.
Right.
What is, percentage-wise, the people coming off of it? Is there a problem? Do people recover more quickly? I want to know the next steps. I'm not even sure the next right question is
asked. If you were a relatively healthy person to begin with, and you got into a situation where you had to be placed on a ventilator, your outcome is probably pretty good.
So you just ride it out on the ventilator. You basically wait for your body to recover, but you can't breathe on your own, so the machine does it until 3-4 days later. Your body defeats the virus, and then you can come off of it.
Right, and that would be a best-case scenario. But as I was saying, if you reach that point, you're in that percentage of the patient demographic where it's probably not going to go well. And especially if you succumb to ARDS, the mortality is sky-high on that. On a good day, you're looking at probably, I'm going to say maybe 60-70% mortality for that particular process, and I'm being generous. Add to that patients with advanced COPD. Their lungs were, excuse me for saying, but their lungs were crap anyhow.
Right.
Now they're really crap, and their outcomes are going to be really poor. They're the ones who are going to succumb the quickest.
Have you personally, how many coronavirus people have you personally intubated?
Me personally, I'd have to check, because we had...
You can just spitball it.
For me personally, maybe two.
Two? Do you know are you noticing the people that are getting intubated because of coronavirus or as a complication of coronavirus, are they in the higher age demographic?
Yes.
Anybody younger?
No.
Are they younger?
By younger, I would say less than 60. No, I haven't seen anyone less than 60 in that situation.
I was, for lack of a life and everybody else being asleep, I was reading the CDC's website last night, and they're talking about the hospitalization rate versus the ICU rate, and it's obviously a massive step down. The hospitalization rate is sometimes as high as 30%, depending on the age demographic. Is that what you're finding in Baltimore as well? There are a lot of people in the hospital, but they're just, why are they in the hospital? Are they there for monitoring? Are they there for what? Because they're not all on ventilation. They're not all on respirators.
Right. No, most of them, just like they are saying, most of these patients, when you dig, like the ones in Italy, most of them had what they call comorbidities or other problems that they already had. I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on TV. But most of the patients that have been coming through who are what we call PUIs, that's the term they're using, or patient under investigation, they haven't been ruled out yet, nor have they been ruled in. But they tick off all the boxes to qualify for the appropriate treatments. Most of them have other problems. The ones who are coming in who, aren't that bad, they don't have those problems.
And are they sent home, the people who aren't that bad?
Yeah.
People who don't have the comorbidity issues. Yeah. The
and
COPD.
Now I can't say that those patients who've been sent home have been proven to have COVID yet. You know, they're being tested, and I honestly don't know what the turnaround time is on that.
Mm-hmm.
But we have discharged patients who have the signs and symptoms.
Rob, I thank you for sticking through the break and indulging my questions here. I just want to ask you.
I'm able to answer.
You're on the front lines in this. So first, thank you for that. Secondly, there are a lot of people who are very concerned.
Right.
And nervous, terrified, in fact, some people. Some people are just blow it off. It's no big deal. It's a conspiracy. It doesn't impact me. I never get sick, so I'm not worried about it.
Right.
Where are you as somebody who's, you've been exposed to it. You know, you've the protective gear that you have has done its job so far, knock on wood, hopefully. Mm-hmm. But you've been exposed to it. How do you deal? How do you cope with that? Where do you fall in between those two extremes?
Honestly, Derek, I, for lack of a better way of saying it, I try not to think about it too much. I really do.
I guess you kind of have to in your situation.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm kind of on the cusp of that. I'm in my mid-50s, and yeah, it's a little nerve-wracking. I've got a family. I worry about bringing it home to them. You know, I'm like almost everyone I work with, I'm stripping down outside before I come in the house.
Mm-hmm.
I get my scrubs off, I come inside, I clean up, and hope for the best.
When I go to the grocery store, I come home and I wash all the clothing that I had on after scrubbing down each grocery item that I brought home. So
yeah.
It's nice to know that I'm at least not insane. Rob,
I want to add one quick thing. As something that occurred to me literally back in November, December, I feel like we've been dealing with this a long time. Back in November, December, we were searching, you know, when we test for things, when you come in, we look for something. We don't find what we don't look for, if you mm-hmm. follow me. And we look for influenza A, we look for influenza B. We were seeing tons of patients with flu-like symptoms, fever, cough, problems like that. Patients were hospitalized. But if it didn't show up as A or B, well, then we just called it a viral syndrome and didn't care. I was seeing so many patients who were not positive for flu but still had all the symptoms that I actually asked one of the docs, I'm like, are our testing kits bad? And they're like, I don't know. I guess we're just having a lot of either false negatives or something else. So I feel like we were seeing this a long time ago, or at least a variant of it.
That's one of the things is if you don't know what to look for, you don't know what you'll find.
Right.
And that is one of the speculations that we are sitting there. We could have had this for much, much longer. It'll be very interesting when we do the post-mortem, if we will, when we find out the truth. Rob, please call in again.
I'll be happy to, Derek. I absolutely love your show.
Well, I appreciate it, and thank you for what you do. It's much more important than just being some dude sitting behind a microphone. So,
hey, you're entertaining me, man.
Well, stay safe. I'll keep trying to make you laugh, but you stay safe and keep trying to make people better. Thank you. All right, that was Rob, the medical technician in Baltimore, who called into my radio show yesterday, and I thought it was worth sharing just because I thought there was useful information in there. I learned things. I hope you did too, and it made me feel better knowing, A, that there are people like Rob out there, and to get some information that isn't filtered through the media or some television doctor who doesn't practice medicine really anymore, but somebody who's actually out there. He's not a doctor. He's not a medical doctor, but he's a technician, somebody who's on the front lines. It's one thing to read a report. It's another thing to talk to even a private, not that he's a private, but somebody out there during the shooting war. So that's why I wanted to play that. Now we get to Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy, and his fascinating life story and what MyPillow, the company, is doing to help in this time when our country needs the help. All righty. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller podcast for Friday. And as we do every Friday, we bring somebody into our world and pick their brain. And rarely has it been more of an honor and more important, to be perfectly honest with you, than to be joined by our guest, Mike Lindell. You recognize him. You can see him right there.
from MyPillow fame, and now manufacturing one of the most important commodities in America, a medical mask. So thank you for taking the time, sir.
Yes, thanks. It's been my honor to be able to even do it, to have the privilege of being able to help out.
First, how did this occur to you? Because you're making pillows. About, by the way, I have four of your pillows.
Oh, you do? Oh, you're looking good. I knew you would. it was about 4 weeks ago, and I have a lot of friends in the administration, all the way to the president, and I said, you know what, you kept hearing about this need, and I said, you know what, I'm gonna do what it is to switch over and see what kind of masks they need. So I checked around the ones that I could make that they're in need of right now, because they can't get the N95s or whatever they're called, are these cotton masks. And so the administration set up a coalition of fabric people with fabricators from across the country. And so we found out from them, you know, what different specs were. And I had to get elastic with no latex. That was quite a deal, because there's a shortage. And we put it all together. It all came together 3 days ago. And I've been bringing in sewers and converted my whole factory, one of my factories, over completely over to making the face masks now. And I have three other companies, that one in Connecticut, one in Massachusetts, and one in North Carolina, and one in Forest Lake, Minnesota, that all make parts for my pillow, like part of our topper here in the U.S. We've converted them over too. So we're just as fast as we can get switched over to the face mask. It's amazing.
What's important to note as well is that you guys, there's a demand for these in the public as well, but you aren't engaging in that. You're not selling them.
I need to let everybody know out there, I cannot sell. I didn't make these to sell to the public and make a commodity. I can't. The ones I'm making, they're in such a demand for our hospitals, our first responders. This is our first priority here. We've got to get, and I've decided too when we get through this, and people should have hope. What's going to happen? We're going to have so many good things when we come out of this. And one of the things, we're going to be well prepared. We're going to have U.S. manufacturers making our medical supplies, where 95% of them were over in China and stuff. And you can bet this president, being the best president we ever had, to be proactive. And he's like, company like MyPillow, we're going to continue to manufacture things, whether it's gowns or whatever, going forward. So if something like this ever happens again, we have our own manufacturers right here.
That's one of the things that really differentiates this country from the rest of the world, and this system from the rest of socialism and communism and all the other various iterations of that, is the American economy and the American business sector snapped to attention. They said they did it selflessly because it was important to the people in this country. But there's also with it, in times like this, it's bizarre to think of, but there are incredible opportunities there for people who now find themselves out of work, that we're recognizing needs that we knew but didn't address before. Right. So, yeah, it's very important. And talk about that as a businessman, a business perspective.
Yeah, you know, it's just like, I can go all the way back. You look at any tragedies our country has had. Let's go back. I don't, if people remember the Tylenol scare, I think it was in the 80s, where there was a Tylenol that was poisoned, I think, out on the West Coast somewhere. Well,
cyanide.
What happened after that was, if you remember, it changed everything, because Tylenol came up with a good way to seal their pack or their containers, and everything from ketchup to everything we dealt with finally had a safety seal on it. I mean, what a concept, right? I can't imagine that we didn't have this before. So all this change, and all the companies reacted and changed their, and made it better for us all, safer. 9/11, look what happened with 9/11. If 9/11, the silver lining there is, after that, everybody, look at everyone in New York, how they reacted, how everyone pitched in together to do that. But also, look at the safety things that we put in so that we are safe over here from as much as we can be from terrorism. Can you imagine before? I mean, you could walk into an airport. I mean, it was all, complacent. Everybody was just nonchalant before 9/11. Well, with this now, you think of all the great things that are going to come. One thing our president has is, he not only has great problem solution, he's gifted with that, but he's also gifted knowing what the solution manifests to. That's really important. You know, I I was saying, talking to some people the other day from the administration, and, you know, when we come out of this, the public's going to want a confidence to go back into your, you know, your movie theaters, your sporting events and all this. Well, things are getting put in place. Like, I'm working right now with some sanitizers that'll last 24 hours or some spray ones in businesses that'll last 7 days. So it's going to be things like this. And then everybody washing their hands and everybody just being more careful. We're probably going to have less disease and less things happen after this is all done than we've ever had, because we're finally, you know, we got a little complacent. Everybody did with, you know, washing your hands and just doing common everyday things that we should have been doing.
Yeah, it is frightening to think that so many Americans had to learn how to wash their hands all over again. But hey, you know, you take your victories where you can. But that is really right. It's the American spirit. It's the innovation that you have there that is going to make us safer. It is going to be a tough time afterwards when we get the all clear, or as close to all clear as you can get when fighting a faceless, invisible enemy, where people can go back to restaurants. There's going to be a lot of apprehension about that, and a lot of people who won't do that. How do you envision the economy coming back from that, as everybody kind of goes into the pool with one little toe at a time?
Well, that's the thing. I think that we're getting proactive right now. I think that's a lot of things on these parallel railroad tracks. So many private sector businesses and entrepreneurs and inventors, along with the administration. I'll tell you what, we're taking input from everywhere, and I really believe you're going to have, let's say it's a restaurant, I believe you're going to have, that restaurant will have a, you know, whatever, a spray that's 7 days that it's EPA approved or whatever, and FDA approved, and it's in there, and everyone's going to have these things, and you walk in, maybe walk into a restaurant, and you have to use this certain sanitizer at the door. You know, whatever, there'll be things in place, because if you don't give people confidence, you're right, it could take a long time. But I really believe that, you know, I believe we had hope. One thing we did have is something we never had in history before this happened. We had the best economy ever, the best unemployment, you know, ever. I mean, the rates. So we had a taste of what this, how good everything could be. So that gives everybody hope and confidence. Can you imagine where we would be if we didn't have this president, this administration, and all the things he's done that were set up so we could even absorb this? And people would have been so hopeless out there that never had jobs. And now they're just sitting, that all of a sudden now they're just sitting with even more hopelessness. You know, so I think I think it's uniting our country. I think the president's ratings up over 60% handling this. My friends that did not, I got a text the other day, and I actually forwarded on to the president. This was a friend of mine that he actually is a Trump hater, and he's a friend of mine, and he sends a text to me. You know, Mike, you know, I don't care too much for, I'm not a big fan of the president, but boy, he's doing a great job. He says, I almost feel like he's growing on me. He's changing my mind, you know, and that meant a lot to me, because I'm hearing that from everybody.
Right.
Because they can see it with their own eyes, instead of getting fake news and all these attacks every day. We've united as much as, you know, as a country, as a people, and even some of the media, where, hey, we're all in this together. And getting through this. And I think that's a big thing. And people see where pragmatic, common sense decisions, it's really showing what you can do without government, without, you know, rolling back regulations, how fast we can react to these things. I couldn't be making masks right now if it wouldn't have been, you're taking regulations and you're going, let's do this and this. You're approved. Go, go, go. You know what I mean?
Well, that's one of the things that I think we're going to have a bit of reckoning. First of all, you're right about the country coming together, and that's why the media wants to stop carrying the daily coronavirus task force briefings, because it does show just how in command of the situation the president is.
That's right.
CNN does not like that. But we're gonna have to have a reckoning when this is over, because you're watching. I used to work at Americans for Tax Reform for Grover Norquist, and they have compiled an incredibly long and growing list of regulations and rules and laws that have been waived in order to spur innovation. And when we're done, we're going to have to look back and wonder, why were these things ever in place in the first place?
Yeah. You know what? I'm going to give you an example. before this started, I have my book out. It's called What Are the Odds? I have 3 million copies. I self-published, even printed my own paper. It's in one of my warehouses. I was just getting ready to launch before this started. And what I'm doing with that money was going to use it for, it's called the Lindell Recovery Network. It was going to help addicts across the country. I'm still going to launch it, but it helped millions of addicts. You know, I was an ex-cocaine addict and crack cocaine. Well, let me tell you the regulations that I found out as I set up this network. 30 some states have a regulation where in order to counsel an addict, okay, in order to be a counselor, you had to go to college for 4 years, walk 12 miles, swim across three lakes, all this stuff in there. Well, I'll tell you what, I've forgotten more about addiction than anyone would ever teach me with 4 years of college if they've never been there. I want the addict that's been there, went and got set free and where their heart restored. I want to hear from them. And these are things that I was there when the president signed the opiate bill. I mean, the amazing things he's doing is saying, why was this here in the first place? You know what I mean? Somebody had to make a rule, more control over us that just strangled us at where you could actually just, you know, if you didn't have it, so much more gets done. And we're living it right now. I think it's amazing.
I hope that these things waived, stay away permanently. Your personal story is fascinating to me because it is the personification of the American dream. And if you watched any of the Democratic debates, you're a unicorn. You can't exist because the system is rigged against you. You don't go much further down than being addicted to crack cocaine.
Being
one of the most successful businessmen in the country. What was there a moment of, like, I want to know your pivot point. Not when necessarily you hit bottom, but when you realized, because you don't go into crack cocaine because you got nothing better to do. You're down. Something drives you there. There has to be a pivot point when you realize there's a better way.
Well, let me just backtrack a little. I don't believe addiction's a disease. I mean, right now they prey on it. They say these secular treatment centers that say, oh, you know, addiction's a disease. Your loved one, give us 30 grand. You got insurance, cash in your 501 or your 401k. They prey on that. Like it's a disease. Addiction is not a disease. I believe it comes from childhood wounds, from trauma, fatherlessness, not having a family there. You know, if something happens in childhood or, you know, veterans, when they get traumatized, these things manifest to inner pain. My parents divorced when I was 7 years old. Back when divorced in 1968, I was the only divorced kid in the whole school. And I would either not talk to people or I would show off and do something, you know, really stupid, like climb out of a moving bus window. Well, this followed me through. I was very shy. I thought, well, I just don't like talking to people. Well, that was me wanting not to expose myself. You can't get rejected if you don't talk. So I would just, and then when I got introduced to cocaine in the 80s, boy, I could talk your ear off. It was a false sense of security. It mass pain. I mean, this is what all addictions do. I don't care what it is. It can be gambling, you know, crack, meth, sex addiction, whatever it is. Addictions were their mass pain. And then it turned to crack in the early 2000s. I was a very functioning cocaine addict for years. What I want to say to people out there, addiction affects all of us, no matter how many forks you eat with. I was a very functioning addict. I wasn't what you see in the street. Like, oh yeah, there's all our addicts out there. No, they're eating with four forks, a lot of them, okay? Well, here, when it switched to crack, that was about in the early 2000s, and then I had these two parallel railroad tracks when I invented my pillow, and then I'm still on crack, and it got to be, I ended up losing everything. I was making the pillows in our living room, and my wife, we divorced after 20 years. This is all in my book. She couldn't take it anymore. People were trying to take what little company we had. A lot of betrayal, and in 2008, the drug dealers actually did an intervention on me. I was in Minneapolis. I was up 14 days with no sleep. Wow. I came out of the room, and they're all three standing there, and I go, we're cutting you off. And they knew of each other, but they had never met. And they go, we're cutting you off. You've been up for 14 days. I said, what is this, an intervention? They go, call it whatever you want. Now, two of them left, and one of them fell asleep. And I went out to the streets at 2:30 in the morning in Minneapolis. I walked all around, couldn't buy crack anywhere, and I came back upstairs. And here's what he said. He goes, give me your phone. I'm going to take a picture of you for that book you've been telling us about. He says, you've been telling us for years, it's just MyPillow. It's just a platform for God. And you're going to come back and help us out of this addiction life we're leading. And we're not going to let you die on us. Two of them work for me now. They're born again Christians. I mean, they so it's come full circle. And when I ended up on January 16, 2009 is where I did quit overnight finally. It was by the grace of God. On that day, I just knew that if I waited one more day, I made sure I didn't have any money where it'd be this great comeback with God, all things are possible. But I knew that the next day I went, I'd have two choices in my life or two paths. This path was going to be gone forever, which was my calling where I'm at today. This other one would be wherever I would have ended up. And so I just prayed that day. I said, God, I don't ever want to have the desire again. And I'll do this big platform. I knew that was my calling. And I woke up the next day and the desire was gone. But now I want everyone to say that was a miracle. But 2 months later, I did go to a faith-based treatment center, which any addict out there, there's nothing better. Your teen challenges, your Salvation Armies, your Union Gospel. These guys don't shame you. They've replaced those wounds with Jesus Christ. They're out there. You're going in there and you're finding out why you were an addict in the first place. And their success rates are 80% on up, where secular treatment centers nowadays are 10% and lower, or 50. I mean, it's night and day, you know.
Right.
But you got me going on that one.
No. Look, this is fascinating. It's a little apprehensive when you're interviewing somebody with your history, just because you don't know how much they want to divulge about it.
I tell it all. I know. That's what when they call it your CNNs of the world, they can't attack me. I've already told it all, right?
it's why you should always tell the truth, because it's an easier story to remember.
That's so right. I want to say something too. When we talk about news channels, I didn't know anything about politics. When I came out of crack cocaine in 2009, it was like coming out of a dream. I had never voted. I didn't know a liberal from a conservative. I was a blank slate. I look around and all my friends were unemployed. They were losing their houses. I had already lost mine. I'm going, what did I miss? You know, all this stuff was these terrible things that were going on in our country. We had a president giving money to an evil empire, all these things. I'm going, what's going on? Where'd common sense go? And everybody's trying to not give out trophies at halftime of some games. I'm going, are giving everybody a participation trophy? And anyway, it gets to be 2016. And I ended up, I got called by Donald Trump to meet him in a private meeting in Washington, in New York Tower, or New Trump Tower in New York City. And I met him before, you know, when I heard he was running and stuff, I learned what a liberal and a conservative was. And I go, wow, everything falls kind of right here for me. Well, I end up meeting Donald Trump. Now, I get invited out there on August 15, 2016. Now, I'm in Minnesota. I can tell the media that back then I'm walking across the street and they'd all be there. Hey, how fast, Mike? Well, whatever. So I met him in New York City. I came back to Minnesota all excited to tell the whole everybody about what I meant. This guy's going to be the greatest president. He's so down to earth and common sense. And I had talked to his employees and they all said great things. I got back to Minnesota and I did a press release that I had met him. Didn't even tell you what we talked about. I was called a racist. I was never put on air. And I'm going, what did I do? But you know what that made me do? I went all in and I've never looked back. Now I can look and say, I told you so.
And that's what's great. If you're true to yourself, you don't really have to worry about what anybody else says. And your business has taken off because of that. I'm curious, though, in the midst of coronavirus, while you're shifting 75% of your business to manufacturing these masks, what is that doing to the business? How are the employees handling it? How are sales going? Because I literally have four of your pillows. I was gifted two by my in-laws and bought two more because I loved them so much.
Right. Well, here's what happened. You go back, it's like a four-week cycle. 4 weeks ago, we lost all our shows in the country. I have over 100 people that do home shows and fairs and events across the country. That is their home. They go from show to show, all the way from Alaska to Hawaii and everywhere in between. And all of them lost their jobs. The shows just stopped on a dime. All of my stores got shut down. So then we shifted. We had sewers that didn't have anything to do. And then we had other venues that went down too. Well, now all of a sudden, and when more people got put into quarantine into, you know, where they couldn't go anywhere, some of these states starting shutting down, well, more people are watching on TV. So that perked us up a little bit, because there, you know, some people are that never watch TV now are watching TV. So it's right. Like, wow, who's that guy on TV selling pillows, you know? So we got a little bit from there, but now I'm able to keep them busy with the, with these face masks. And it's just, and I'm hiring a lot of people in Minnesota here, at least for the one factory I have here. We're hiring as fast as we can get them and training them. And we've got our whole factory set up so they're safe in there, 6 feet apart. We have sanitizers. We have things coming in where they can come in safe, or they can, or we even have them where they can sew from home. So we're setting up all kinds of strategies.
That's great. I've been talking to people around the country. I've talked to people in Arizona, Florida this week. How are the people just holding up in Minnesota? I'm from Michigan originally, so I know that Midwestern sort of hardiness, but still, yeah. this is a special time.
Well, I've been all around the country during this last month. I was in Texas, Florida. I've been to Scottsdale. I've been to D.C. I've been all around in the last 4 weeks, and I can tell you it's the same all over. Everybody, I just think they have like a confidence about them, and I think they're using this time, you know, hopefully, well, they're all using this time to spend time with their families, get, you know, pull out their Bibles, keep praying for and keep the hope up. And I think everyone's got a confidence. I see a confidence all around me. I really do. And I think they know that they're saving lives out there. And that's the key. I mean, I think no one's saying, and even if they're thinking, oh, I'm going to, you know, I think, you know, there might be a few going, they're not going to tell me what to do. You know, it doesn't affect me. It's all happening in New York right now, you know, but I'll tell you what, this, by doing it this way, it's not about, okay, maybe we could have just wrote it out and not shut down, but we wouldn't have had enough hospitals. They're already seeing that in New York right now. We weren't prepared because we get 95% of our stuff from overseas for all these respirators and masks and all this. Where if this ever happens again, by doing it this way now, maybe something terrible happens next time. We're well prepared. And we won't ever have to do this again, you know, and it's
starting up businesses, you know what it takes, logistics and dealing with all the regulations and what have you. How long realistically, if you had to guess, I know you're not a pharmaceutical expert and having the right ingredients is going to take some time in manufacturing and that. But when you look into the future, ballparking it, how long do you think it would be for us to be the manufacturer of our antibiotics, for example, which is wildly important?
I think with this president, he's going to drive that home, and it's going to happen very fast. I would say you look at what our country did with Pearl Harbor. We got war ready, what, in months? I mean everybody, boom, you know, when they, you know, we are that kind of people here in the United States, and I think it's going to happen real fast. Probably before this is completely gone, there's going to be already stuff in place, like manufacturers like myself and pharmaceutical companies and all these respirator companies. They're going to all be in place here. That's the ones that shifted. I believe that that shifted over. They're going to branch out, and then we're going to have better technology too here. And we're going to, you know, it's just like when we have our own oil now. We're not oil dependent anymore. Do you know how, you know, what a leverage that is on the rest of the world that we'd have before, like this over our head all the time, having to give money to protect oil nations for nothing, like the president says. We keep protecting these places just so we could buy their high-priced oil back then. You know what I mean? It didn't make sense. Well, I would say it's all going to happen within the next 12 months where, you know, that's my guess. And I would say, and if I had to say too, when this would, if I could see, like, when, how does this end? I would say, just like the president said the other night, I think if you treat every area as a pocket when it peaks, I don't think it's going to be, hey, United States, everybody open up. It's going to be just like when it started shutting down in pockets. It's going to reopen like that, where this one's got prepared now. I like what the governor of New York said yesterday, working with the president. He, and I don't know if this is happening, but he said, hey, we're at this terrible peak right now. We are the ground zero right now in this country of this pandemic. We need respirators, And why couldn't other states? He reached out and said, you guys give them to us. And then when, as we get over this peak, then we'll give them back and we'll help all of you. So it's kind of like, let's, you know, let's shift what we have around. You know, they're doing like two tight, like I did in Italy or whatever. They're trying two people. But I mean, it just made common sense. Those are common sense decisions that are going on right now that you would never get this by before, going, hey, can you, hey, Governor, will you shift these over? Well, let's get them 16 ways of approval and let's sign a contract and you can give them back on Thursday. You know, these are things that you would do in the streets and say, let's make this decision now. We got a gun to our head. Am I going to sit there? Hey, could you sign a contract? You won't shoot me. You know, I mean, crazy.
You know? Could this happen anywhere but the United States, that sort of innovation on the fly? I mean, our government does seem to be in the way. It seems to set up speed bumps rather than, more than anything else, but it's plowing them now. But right. The spirit of the people of this country, you don't see that throughout the rest of Europe. They're, the greatest companies in the world are not being made in France or Germany. Very successful companies there, but the new ones propping up aren't really propping up anywhere but here.
This is where people better look around, especially the ZBs and millennials or whatever that have been brainwashed by our colleges and stuff with socialism and stuff. This is, we are at our best here with capitalism and good ingenuity and entrepreneurs. You know, what I seen right before this happened, I have a new platform coming out called mystore.com. It's gonna be a safe place for entrepreneurs to put their products so that they don't get copied on Amazon and all these other people that copy our products here and overseas and bring them in here corruptly. And what I was seeing right before this happened was entrepreneurs, the consumer confidence was so good, they were out taking chances again and starting up small businesses and starting and inventing products. Because why? Because they had a great job to fall back on for a safety net. They took the fear out of it, you know? Well, now, you know what? When we get through this, we're going to have that back again, and everyone's going to see, you know what? If you take it, the fear out of it, and just say, wow, if we get through this and this economy, by the way, it's just going to go through. It's going to be crazy. You've seen it before. It's going to go. I'm an optimist, but it's going to be amazing. And it's just, you know, you get over there. It's going to, as you're getting over stuff and all of a sudden, you know, you're going to have five more years of the greatest president this country's ever seen. And that it just, can you imagine if we didn't have him to roll back all these regulations right now, we'd be sitting here, people would be dying everywhere in our country because they'd be going, just a minute, you need to be FDA approved, FTC approved, EBA approved, CD3605 approved, you know, making phone calls, having group discussions for days on end, like typical corporations that have all these. You know, what's funny is that in the private sector, even CEOs are making decisions without having all these meetings that they normally have, all these little think tank ones where they decide for days whether to move into, you know, these decisions are getting made very fast.
Yeah, no, Ford and General Motors moving into the respirator business.
Yeah, yeah.
It didn't require a meeting of the board. They said, this is a need, right. The American people need it. Let's do it. That's the beauty. I got to tell you, man, I have two kids that are under three, and depending on which story I just read or just sort report I just saw, there's moments where I'm just like, I don't know. And then there are moments I feel good. You should be if you get out of this pillow racket, you got a motivational speaker or football coach future ahead of you.
Well, I do speaking all around the country. Now, if you look on my book on the back of it, I got over my fear of speaking, and I've spoken at Liberty. I came when I finally got a full surrender to Jesus on February 18, 2017. Not even a month later, I went to U.S. Bank Stadium and spoke for 50,000 millennials. And it was just, I mean, surreal. So it's I enjoy it because I'm passionate. I'm not going to change who I am. And I want anybody out there, it's just like, I'll tell you this funny part. On my Twitter, when I get, they'll go, you know, every time let's say it's Fox, that one of the hosts will do something, they'll go, boycott my pillow and Mike Lindell. And then another guy will say, don't boycott him. He'll double his ads. We see enough of that guy.
Well, Mike, when does the book, I know it's been messed up by this, but when, where can people find out about the book?
Right now, you can get it right now, and the proceeds go to the best cause ever in history. And if you buy it now, you go to mystore.com. That's my new platform. I just got the book there now. You can go to mypillow.com, and you can get it. And if you get it today, what I have right now, you can get it for You buy the book, and I'm going to give you a $25 gift card for MyPillow right now. I'm throwing it in. I'm going to ship it to you free. I just want to get this, such a message of hope. And you're basically getting the book. I think it's $29.95. You get the $25 gift card, you get it shipped free. I mean, I just want to get the message out there, because if you read this book, it's like reading the best fiction novel you ever read. And then you're going to go, what? This is real? And because it's not just about addiction, it's about entrepreneurship, it's about hope, it's about faith, it's about transformation. Everyone that's read it so far before the launch, I probably sold 20,000 right before we were going to launch here about a month ago. And I've been just getting feedback. I never put it down. I read it cover to cover and all these things. It's been really good to hear that. It took me 7 years to write this. And it was like my whole life, like living inside of a movie. It is still that. Like, I still feel like I'm living inside the movie. One of the times when I was invited to the White House for the manufacturing summit by the president, and first time I was ever in the White House, I walk in, I go, wow. And then I go, I seen my name tag, and there was no name tag here. And I said, there was like 20 of us in the room. I said, who's sitting here? He said, the president is. I'm going, well, so now I'm on TV, on national TV, and I'm next to the president, and you can look it up online, everybody can, but all my friends are going home, my old buddies are going, what is that ex-crack addict sitting next to the president? He goes, Jesus, has to be real. This is a miracle.
You're probably the second most famous man next to the president and the most famous former crack addict. So there you go. Congratulations on the book. Thank you for what you're doing with the company right now in this time of need. Thank you for taking the time for us today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. And I want everybody out there, keep the hope, keep the faith. We're going to get through this, and we're going to come out the other end stronger and better than any country ever.
And go get a MyPillow, because I can vouch for that. Thank you, Mike Lindell.
Thanks. God bless. See ya.
Told you, the guy's just a barrel of energy and excitement, and you believe him. You like come away going, I feel pretty good about these things. Could be a motivational speaker, could be a football coach. I didn't even ever have a football coach. I never played football. Hockey coaches are less than that. There's a lot of smacking in the helmet and telling you to get off your ass and skate, dig deeper, dig. It's different, I guess. Anyway, that is all the time we have. You can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com, if you want to help the program and upgrade the system, the sound system, and the editing software and all that good stuff. It's patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. Every little dollar helps. And we're trying a new way of uploading that I'm responsible for. So yesterday's show had problems showing up in some of your feeds or whatever, because there's like 10 trillion different ways to get a podcast apparently, and the feed was not working. Apparently, allegedly, it's working now. So if you got this and you listened all the way to the end, get a life. No, just kidding. But if you listen all the way to the end, hopefully the problem is solved. I appreciate all the emails, because I can't subscribe to it. I don't know where this thing goes. So I don't know if it's not showing up somewhere. The people who are supposed to know there's been turnover. So we're all sort of fumbling through this together. You can always find it on the website. I know it's on iTunes and Stitcher and SoundCloud are supposed to be on Stitcher. Stitcher was one of the problems. Anyway, I don't understand it, but they tell me they've got the problem fixed. So it can't have babies anymore or something. Maybe I'm misunderstanding what they mean. Anyway, that is all the time we have. Have a fun, secluded weekend. There's no reason to go out. There's nothing to do this weekend anyway. Play some board games or whatever. I'll see you again come Monday. It'll be all right. Come Monday. I won't be touching anybody, any of you. My wife and kids, yes, but that's it. I'll be holding them tight. I'm not going to sing. I'll leave you alone now. I'm going. Thank you.